Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. We're happy to be back this weekend. It's Chef in the Chapeau. What's going on out there in Madison Valley, Chef?
Oh, all is good. It's sunny and 72 degrees. You know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning and everything is good.
Isn't that funny when you're stuck at home and you can make your life anything you want it to be when you're not going out, right?
That's right. You can actually choose your background. You could put Hawaii in the background.
I know, exactly. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, owner of the Serious Takeout in Ballard, 52nd and 14th Northwest, and of course, Serious Pie downtown. And where I've been hanging out a lot lately is C-Town, which is down. We've combined all three of our market area restaurants, C-Town, Rub Shack, and Etta's, and we're doing outside patio and indoor seating, and I've been having a blast down there. I'm doing corned beef sandwiches all weekend, Chef. I when I planned my St. Paddy's Day pop-up out at the dock in Ballard on Wednesday, I thought, well, last year we missed St. Paddy's Day because of COVID. The whole thing just kind of flew by us. You know, it was right at that transition time of closing all the restaurants. Yeah. And so this year I thought I'd double up. And so we're doing the Reubens and corned beef sandwiches all weekend down at C-Town in the Pike Place Market out on the dock there, out on the patio. And they are so good. I just miss corned beef. I only eat it at St. Paddy's Day. It's one of those things I just don't cook very often throughout the year. So delicious. How did your corned beef come out, Chef?
Oh, corned beef was delicious. We did a sous vide with all the brine. First we brined it, and then we did a sous vide cooking for the brisket for about a day and a half, almost 2 days. And then, you know, we just give it a nice sear outside of the, once it was out of the bag and cooked, give it a nice sear on the outside, give it a nice crust.
Mm.
And then, it, of course, it sliced like butter.
Mm-hmm.
And next to that, we had a nice stock made to go with cabbages, carrots, potatoes, gherkins, cornichons, and Dijon mustard. And
so classic.
I just love that. With a little jus right on top of that meat and those vegetables. And oh.
Now, that would all be delicious, even if you didn't corn it, right? That would all, just roasted brisket would be great that way, too. So with the mustard and cornichon. And the cornichon really worked beautifully with the fatty brisket, though. That's really why that, and the mustard being sharp works great with the fatty brisket that way.
Cut through that fat.
Yeah.
So we're doing a box the whole weekend. We're doing a St. Patty's Day's box, multi-course, you know, kind of thing. We have a beautiful slaw of fennel and onion. Anyway, it's a, and I would entice people to go and visit the site, luketogo.com, and
check it out.
TheChefInTheHat.com.
Yeah. All right. So we're dedicating our first hour today to what it's going to take to get back up and running in our restaurants during this time. There was a big article in the Seattle Times about the Dahlia transitioning to Serious Pie downtown and the Dahlia Bakery reopening in the north end of that space. And I made a comment that, you know, because it seems like people just say, oh, when are you going to reopen? It's like, it's just not that easy. We're talking millions of dollars. When you have 15 restaurants, it's costing me millions to close. It's going to easily cost me millions to open. And as I'm just not a fountain of dollar bills. I just have much less $1,000 bills. So we're going to dedicate our first hour to kind of talk about what we need to do to kind of get reopened. And I thought, I was quoted, and it says, there seems to be a perception that when the governor decides that we can reopen, that it's like turning on a faucet and boom, we're reopened. It does not work that way, for us anyway. We need to contemplate menus. We need to contemplate how to re-inventory, retrain. These are all of our people are gone. We have to hire all new staffs, right? And then, like any business, you have to have a plan for when you get open to how do you stay open? How do you pay the bills? How do you do all that stuff, right? So we're going to talk about that for our first hour and try and shed some light on what it's going to take to reopen restaurants around town. And of course, some restaurants never close. Some have stayed open, so they're at a different spot than we are. It just wasn't feasible for us. In our second hour, we have our Pass It Down segment. We found somebody who loves their savory Greek pie, the spinach pie. And I love that. Is one of my favorite foods. Jackie made them the other night with chard and feta and goat cheese combination. Oh, they were so good.
Mm.
We're going to talk to the president and CFO at the beloved Dick's Restaurants. Jasmine Donovan's going to be here. They've just announced a new Bellevue restaurant for the first time. That's pretty exciting for them, I think. And then we're going to play our Rub With Love Tasty trivia game to wrap up the show. excited to win that because I haven't won in a very long time. So I gave Amy a raise so that she would write easier questions for me.
Did you cash my check yet?
Yeah.
All right. So the first thing I'm going to say, we'll get this out of the way quick. The PPP funds. I don't know if Chef, if you've applied for a new round of PPP funds. We certainly have. And without the PPP funds, which is the Paycheck Protection Program, is what that PPP stands for. We would not be reopening our restaurants. There's not a chance that we could have afforded. It was so expensive to close them. And when you close a restaurant, you really have to. There's so many things, right? You don't even think about. Let's just take our produce bill. We buy produce every day. And that produce bill, because we've been buying from the same guy for 30, 40 years, you have 30 days to pay, typically, right? So you get produce on March 1st, you pay it by April 1st. What we never contemplated, it's like I was always proud we never used a bank, but I never thought about the revolving credit that you use every day. I didn't think about that. So for 30 days after we closed with zero revenue, we had 30 days every day we got a produce bill from the previous month. That's just one out of hundreds of revolving credit bills that came in. And typically, Chef, you understand this, that when it slows down, you still, you know, when it's slow, let's say you had a busy week, then you had a slow week, you still have revenue coming in. And you can still kind of make your bills, or you're just behind by 3 days.
You slide through.
Yeah, you slide through. When the revenue literally drops off a cliff, it changes the ball game. So that's what we're going to talk about today. When we come back, we're going to get rolling and talk a little bit about PPP funds. And then, Amy, we've broken down different things. What is some of the things we're going to talk about in the segment? Outdoor dining, how's that going to work? Indoor dining, pop-ups, hiring and training staff, keeping them safe. Menu creation of, you know, when you have to do a whole different menu when you move down this path. And so we're going to see how much of that is going to stay with us as we move forward. We're going to decide on service style. Is it the regular back to China and glassware? Do you stay with to-go for a bit? And how do you stay in business with the operations? Like, how do you fund a slow week when you've already lost all your, you know, already spent all your reserves over the last year? So those are all things that we're going to deal with today in the first hour of how to get back reopened. And then in the second hour, we're going to have a lot of fun with all sorts of things. Looking forward to that. All right, so when we come back, how do you reopen after a pandemic or even during a pandemic? On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, it's the Hot Stove Society. And we're back in the Hot Stove Society. It's the Tom Douglas and Terry Rotaro Show. Hey, Chef.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Super fantastic. Always great to see your face on Friday mornings when we do our show. We're talking PPP, and I wanted to go back for 1 second. We're going to kind of talk about what it's going to take for you and I, just two restaurateurs here in Seattle, to get reopened. And because I think there's a fallacy out there that people think that, boom, when the governor says you can reopen, you just open the doors and get started. And to me, it's a little bit like opening a brand new – it's not a little bit. It's, for me, literally, it's like opening a brand new restaurant. The only difference is I don't have to pay for – the debt service on build out and things like that, because most of my spaces are already complete restaurants. So you have to pay other things like training a new staff, hiring a new staff, getting them all set up with benefits and do all the things that you can possibly afford right now. So PPP is Payroll Protection Plan, and literally the money that you borrow, it's a loan, and you borrow it, and then if you use it in a certain way, if you use it for your payroll and you use a certain amount of it for your payroll. I want to say it's 60% or 75%, something like that. I don't know the exact number.
Minimum 60%.
For payroll. Once you have accomplished that, then you can take the rest of that money and put it towards rent and utilities. And the only way you can do that. And so then at the end of the day, if you've done everything correctly, it's possibly forgiven. If you mess up, you owe the money back as a loan with interest. So that's what a payroll protection plan is. So, Chef, when you are thinking about moving forward here in the next year, let's just say, and let's start in the menu area of this. What is your plan of, look at you, when you closed Luke, you closed a restaurant that was kind of a modern American French bistro, right?
Right.
Right. And you did outdoor seating and you did indoor seating, but you didn't really do a to-go program or anything like that. What is your plan over the next year with Luke when it comes to menu? How are you going to change as you reopen?
So we just did our first meeting yesterday in terms of really putting all the different ideas on the table. And the number one thing that we have going right now is just to-go. So, and it's very hard to imagine the future being without to-go. In the past, up until COVID, at Luke, our to-go program was less than 1% of our business. So it was non-existent. That has obviously totally changed and pivoted into a completely different strategy due to COVID, like everybody else. And but as the future, and I don't even look a year down the line, we're only looking like past the summer, because there is many options, many options that could be, that needs to be on the table that could still happen. Even though people feel like, you know, vaccine is the secret of the fountain of youth, it is not the solution exactly as we can see in other countries. This thing still can come back in the fall or even in the summer and hit us. So we do have to keep certain ideas like this in the program.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind that the governor is giving you 3-week windows to work in, and then he can just pull the plug.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's another thing is, and by the way, that gets exhausting. Please don't do that. It's very expensive and very exhausting to do this over and again. And it, even for the best of spirited people, it definitely takes a toll eventually. It's not funny to just reopen and close every time. So anyway, back to the future, we're planning about, you know, between now and September and see how are we going to abort this. So menu-wise, we have to keep thinking that we're going to be very limited in employees, because we're not going to have, you know, the life of what we had in 2019. We're going to have the life of 2020 with COVID around. And even though there's vaccine, we still have to be protective, especially at the beginning. It's not because you have the vaccine and you should put the mask down and fill up an entire restaurant of people for 3 hours or 2 hours, whatever. To me, I don't believe in that. That's my own personal belief. I mean, I also want to protect our employee. You know, the word is out now from Governor Inslee that starting March 1st, all the restaurant workers can start getting vaccine.
April 1st.
April 1st, pardon me, which is a great news. Until then, we still have to think protection. So I think that our approach is going to be as such. We're going to keep a program of to-go going as much as we can handle of that. And then we're going to focus on starting outside first. We're going to probably, after all, people have been vaccinated, we start with the patio dining. You know, we have 6 tables outside. We'll use those 6 tables. They're 6 feet apart. We're going to put a cover over those tables to be protected. So we have a decent, you know, for a couple of weeks, we're going to start outside, see how the machine is oiled, and then hire more people to actually open inside after that at 50%. Mm-hmm. But that's the basic program that
but
we're going to go with.
But the menu-wise,
as far as the menu, yeah, we're going to keep what we have right now going in the to-go. So we have a soup, a salad, bœuf bourguignon, cassoulet, a risotto for vegetarian purposes, 2 desserts, a charcuterie, a cheese, and then we're going to do a fresh fish of the day and possibly a meat special. So those would be, that would be the menu that we left with when we were limited to 50% before we closed down. We had that, plus we had a few more items, but we're not going to put those few more items at the beginning. We're going to keep it very strict at the beginning so we can actually handle it with the crew that we have right now, mm-hmm, and then slowly but surely hire as we go. Our crew has to be retrained to be doing that, because we've been, the crew that we have right now does not know what the past looks like. They only know what the to-go section looks like. You know, they don't know what it's like to be sitting down outside and inside. So we have to retrain those people and we have to go through the whole menu. Thank God, at least 2 of the cooks have been with me. One was at Lule and one was at Luke a long time ago. So both of those cooks can be with me and you know, handle that. But it's a very difficult target, because the fear that's been installed is two ploy. One is COVID can come back. 2 is the governor can close us down again.
Right.
Those two things, because it has happened multiple times, those two things are definitely in the forefront of my mind.
So let me
normally I would
I know you've been out, been stuck at home because of COVID and your pneumonia issues. Let me just say, you know, my take on what you're saying is that you haven't had the opportunity to go out and about at this point. And so right. I have. I ate at the Met Grill this week. I ate at Gaucho this week. I ate at the Bay Cafe. I ate at Tai Tung. I ate at Sume's Uptown China. I've eaten at five restaurants this week alone. And I'll tell you that people are back indoors. My own restaurants, if you look, yesterday at SeaTown, we had all these people that wanted to sit inside, and they're all coming in. You know what they say when you have to take their temperature, right, before they can come in there? Everyone's just saying, oh, I'm vaxxed, I'm good. And so whether that makes them – that's a little bit different than whether that makes them contagious or not. My point is people are ready to move back indoors, and you might want to reconsider the idea – you know, people have been outdoors for a year now, and they're ready to move back indoors, unless it's a nice out, like in typical. If it's nice out, everyone wants to sit outside no matter what, right? But I would suggest you think about you're doing your 50% indoors. You've got plenty of room to stay 6 feet apart. But I'm telling you where I think the demand is, which is back inside. If you go down to Asagio right next to where we are right now at the hot stove, full every night up to the mandate of the mount, people are ready to move indoors. And we flipped this last week from 80% outdoor and to-go service to now it's already 60% indoors. And it's got so that flipped into 2 weeks that we've been back open, and in the 1 week we're not even at 50% yet, right? 50% starts on the 22nd or something like that. So I'm just telling you, it's flipping fast. So as we think about reopening, you have to really think about what your competition is doing, because if you only have outdoors, but your neighbor is letting people indoors, and it's cold out, like it's going to be cold and rainy all weekend, you're going to get screwed. And so that's just something to think about as we move forward, whether or not you want to go by that plan. And is our plan sound? I get the governor thing, and that's really frightening to think that we could hire all these people back and then, boom, we have to let them go again. That's just a hard thing for everyone. So, but anyway, that's just my thought on your reopening plan.
That's a good wake-up call there. That's cool.
Okay, so in our next segment, service style, we covered a little bit of that today, but what about hours of operations, and how are you feeling about ordering platforms, right? You know, the ordering platforms being DoorDash or Uber or just your own in-house ordering program, just answering the phone and taking a call for to-go food. So let's talk about that a little bit. Website and marketing. If you're going to reopen, you have to have a fresh website that tells people who you are and what you're doing and when you're doing it in a very efficient manner. You know, people got used to OpenTable over the last 10 years of being able to get into any restaurant and find out any bit of information about, so is your OpenTable account up to date? There's things like that. Digital menus versus paper. These QSR codes are real. People know how to use those now. They sit down, they've got a little table tent, and boom, they got the menu right in their hands without me even printing one. And what about payment? Are people going to be comfortable handing their credit cards over anymore, or is it all going to be no-touch payment, like a tap of the phone, or you know, do you have to bring some sort of vehicle to the table? So let's talk about that when we come back, what your plans are and what you thought about, and then we're going to finish up the hour with operations. Ooh, hiring people. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society show. All focus this first hour on how do restaurants get reopened during this pandemic. On Cairo 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society show. Chef Terry is eating a banana, so we're going to go right to right to Amy.
I like how this is live, Tom.
My name is Tom Douglas. I'm chef owner of several joints here around town. You can find anything we do at tomdouglas.com, right?
That Tom is our Douglas website.
Tom. Or here at thehotstovesociety.com or Serious Takeout. Okay, Amy, we're going to jump to you first.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Terry. Terry's finally finished his banana.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, finishing a banana. The chef in a hat, owner of Luke in Madison Valley, and you can find everything at thechefinahat.com.
There you go. All right, our next bit about getting our restaurants reopened now that the governor has let us go to 50% and There is still the threat he could close us down every 3 weeks. Apparently, he's going to make a decision every 3 weeks. But so we have to keep that in the back of our mind the entire time. So what have we learned so far? When we first opened Sirius Takeout, which was 2 weeks after we closed everything, mm-hmm. We did this on wheels in the open air on the dock in Ballard and at my warehouse building that I've owned for 20 years out there. What were the hard things that we ran into, Amy? You were there. What was the big thing we had to learn, and what do you see us taking forward with us?
Well, it was really interesting with the ordering platforms. We started with phone only for Sirius Takeout. So we had pizzas, sandwiches, or salads, desserts. And there were three front of the house people, and we were constantly on the phone. You couldn't even hang it up. You just kind of put your finger over the dial and just waited for it to ring again. Uh-huh. So it was really hard. However, I will say it was so delightful to actually talk to people, and they were excited to talk to us, but they wanted to talk for a while, and meanwhile, the phones were ringing off the hook, and you know, we're trying to get their order in time, and that was interesting. So we thought, ooh, we have to get on all of these ordering platforms. So then we did all of them. I think we literally did four or five of them, mm-hmm. and then it was trying to pivot to that, like all of the different sounds and ding, 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 orders coming in. And
next thing you know, you've got 30 pizzas in a window of time, like from 6:15 to 6:30.
Yeah.
You can't even get fit in the oven.
Now we just, screwed the kitchen. So yeah. That was very interesting. Also, we really had to change our website right away because, we had 13 different restaurants. We had to tell people we have this right now. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of pivoting.
So how do you see that pivot moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're working on our website right now to make it very clear on what we're doing and easy for everyone. All of the delivery, pickup, to go, give us a call, anything, exactly what we're doing since we're changing all the time, indoor, outdoor.
So our pivot was to platforms. Are we going to stay on platforms? Do you think that's important that we stay out there on Talk and on mm-hmm. DoorDash and mm-hmm. Uber and things like that?
I think we do.
That's going to stay.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay. And, I think people that are loyal DoorDash customers or loyal Uber Eats customers, they're going to use that app for their delivery or their mm-hmm. pickup.
Do you think those people are going to come back? Are they just going to eat forever at home? Or do you think they're going to come back indoors and eat at the restaurants?
Oh, I think people will come indoors. Sometimes the app is just, it's so easy because all of your information is already stored on it. So you can just, have
just
your
pop
whole.
It, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like your Amazon Prime account. It's like, boom, you're in and out of Amazon.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Sean is us 20 something here. Sean, our sound and AC, AV guy. You're the one who puts us on Facebook Live during our taping.
That's correct.
What is your feeling as a 20-something? Are you going to go back to restaurants?
Well, first of all, thank you for thinking I'm 20-something.
Oh, really?
I'm much older.
You look so 20-something.
And to that point,
but you're a techie. You're a techie.
I am, and I'm kind of on the cusp of, we kind of had the analog childhood and the digital adulthood, and I'm not the most savvy person, but when it comes to things like what I'm into, I'm really into it. But with the apps, I was just out the other day, and there's this place called Koba, great Lower Queen Anne, great Vietnamese banh mi and things like that. And I was just going to be cool and call it in and pick it up in 15 minutes. And like a half an hour later, I'm still downloading the app and trying to figure it out and things like this.
So they made a big mistake then.
Well, not really, and I don't really blame them, but it was just, when you go there and it says you can use these five different apps, to me it was just, I want maybe like one or two services that are set up, logged in with my credit card that I use. I don't want to have to like go like the new,
you so know, more like Apple Pay where you're like, you just use it for everything?
A little bit, because, I went to I think it was maybe DoorDash and I had to log in either through Facebook or my email. And it was just like, I just wish, and it was me just not setting it up ahead of time and kind of being out and about and not, wanting to take out my credit card and just set it up just out.
But so you would tell Chef Terry and I that stay focused, right? Be clear about how you do your business.
I think that's it. I think it's a little bit too, with all the new ones, because there was like, five or six different ones you could choose from. And I think it's just a matter of kind of finding that path that works and just sticking with it. But it has to be something like that. It has to, I think it's convenient, but for me, it was just I didn't, you know, have the time to kind of set it up. And
Chef, how would you respond to that? What does that make you want to do with your own business as we move towards reopening?
Well, I've looked into Talk a little bit since we've been trying to move on to a platform. We right now have no platform except our website.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about looking into that, into the, you know, the Talk kind of platform, and wanted to expand that way. I'm a little bit scared of all the different platforms out there and try to have, I mean, I've heard stories of restaurants having five different computers or laying down on a table just to have the five different.
Yeah, I've seen it. Delivery. They're all pads. They don't take much space. They're all pads.
Right. They're all iPads, and you get this stuff keep on coming. My biggest fear in that is we're too small to have a complete arrival of orders all at once, you know, which is one thing that we were faced at the beginning when we were still novice in that, you know, we didn't realize that when you have online, the thing just keeps going. You know, people just keep ordering and just, and they just, you know, you don't, they don't know that you're in the weeds already.
Chef, what about hours of operation? To me, that's an area where restaurants could really tidy up their expense line by thinking about hours of operation. We only have about a minute.
So for me, I'm going to go 4:30 to 8 o'clock and keep it at 8 o'clock, which is pretty early. I mean, 8 o'clock, especially in the summertime. But for now, we're going to keep it at that because that seems to be where we gather the most reservation, the most people walking in. And it's extremely sparse and very uneven between 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. So forget this 10 o'clock story. We're going to just stick to 8 so we can be full capacity of occupation while we're open and not waste any money on labor, because as you and I know, that's our biggest, you know, that's our biggest pet peeve right there is the labor.
Well, yeah, labor is 50% of our revenue, so that's a, that's a big nut.
Yeah, so you want to keep it as low as possible, or you want to manage it very well. And to touch on to something quickly, Tom, in terms of paying bills, since we've reopened, Luke, everything is COD in my restaurant. We give a check to everybody who delivers. So like this, we don't have any 30 days surprises.
Yeah. You know, no more surprises.
I got plenty of those already, like the insurance, like the, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't need more, but all the purveyors, we pay them cash on delivery like this. At least we don't have that coming through.
What's funny, when you do that, it's a little bit like incurring credit card fees, right? We use this company called FinTech or Waze so that we don't have to write a check, but it's still COD. But, they, you know, everyone takes their little piece, right? It costs you a percent and a half or 3% here. Or, it's a huge nut, and credit card fees are already a huge nut, almost 3% of your revenue. So credit card fees in our restaurants are about the same as rent. All right, coming up, we're going to continue our discussion about what it's going to take to reopen restaurants and the, you know, the real facts of the matter, rather than this romantic notion that when the governor says, hey, you can open to 50% for the next 3 weeks, that somehow or another you can just live in that world of uncertainty. So we're going to talk about operations, reinventorying, cleaning, floor plans, safety and compliance, and the downtown environment. So that's next on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society show. We're reopening. Yay! On Cairo 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society show. Amy's keeping us moving around here. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And Terry and I have been chatting about what it's going to take to get reopened and all the different things that are outside the lines of, oh, isn't that awesome that you're going to reopen? So, Chef, in this segment, let's jump into some areas. Hiring and firing, hiring is an area that's going to be interesting because every restaurant in the city is looking for people right now, and many of our team have dispersed around the country. I just don't think there's as many people. They've moved to Tacoma, they've moved to Des Moines, Iowa, they've moved everywhere, back where their parents are. Lots of our people went home to be close to family. So it's going to be interesting to see who's even out there.
It's funny you say that because I was talking to one of my chefs yesterday, and I was like, so what about this guy? And he goes, oh, no, that guy moved to Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, what?
And then, you know, all these new folks have to be trained, right? Typically in our restaurant, we train for a week or two, especially if you're a brand new restaurant. It's more like two or three. And basically we're coming in with lots of people that have never been in our system before. And so they have to learn the culture, to learn expectations, all that. That takes time and money, right? Because you're not open. You don't practice on live customers. You practice on food and service and the manager sitting there, and you wait on the manager, show him your stuff.
Right. But there's also training of us. You know, it's new for us as well. So, you know, I'm discovering things as we move along, and I'm definitely leaving much more, you know, everybody to vote in terms of what's the most practical, what's, you know, what have you guys been observing, what are, you know.
What's safest, that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more of that going on, and then do you feel safe? Exactly, that comes up every day. Mm-hmm. How do you feel safe? How do you, you know. So that's important.
That's important. Re-inventorying. Now, you and I, we run a business, and typically how it works, for us anyway, is that we inventory our restaurants on a 30-day basis, so once a month, and then we can determine what we spent on food compared to how much food we've sold. And that goes with food, right, beverages, you know, everything, right? So a typical inventory for me to get, let's say, Palace Kitchen, to get that reopened, I would have to invest about $25,000 to re-inventory the restaurant with beer, wine, liquor, and food. And that's that would be a minimum, I would say. Is that about the same for you? Do you have to think about that that inventory?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's definitely, it's a bit less at Luke, for sure. But at Lule, for example, it was actually more than that. It was probably almost double that. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's big inventory. And, you know, when you close, you're sitting with all that stuff around.
If the governor says, you can't open next week. Yeah.
And then also, you know, you have to, as we talked about earlier, you're re-updating your restaurant, basically. So you're readapting and everything. Not everything works in and flows in the way it used to.
Right.
You know, and then you used to have those stagnant item, let's say some special wine or whatever, you know, that were looking good on your wine list and all that. Those are not going to move on the way out. People are not just going to suddenly buy it because that's the same wine. So there's all kind of different things and you have to think about, you know, and it is definitely not cheap to reopen. And the reason that I want to open in pots, like slowly, is mainly because you don't want to overhire and then refire or, you know, have too many people on the payroll. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be bleeding money left and right senselessly, and you also don't want to have to fire everybody in 3 weeks from now because we're going back to where we were.
Right. So safety and compliance are going to be a weekly meeting for us so that we hear from our teams about situations that they're running into that they need. We have to spread the locker room out so that they don't have lockers right next to each other anymore. We have to spread, obviously, the tables. We only have 50% of the possible revenue that we had before. I think that's, in a funny way, part of the easier one is to spread out a little bit and just do less and do in less hours. The downtown environment is different than when we left. Right now, there's more tents even than when we left a year ago. And there's some urban camping going on that, and on top of that, there's no tourism. I mean, literally, there's people that are doing staycations. We see them in the Pike Place Market quite a bit. But from airline travel, there's no cruise season. So how do you plan on getting your restaurant more full? Like in the downtown core, I would say, since so many hotels are running at 10% occupancy, that used to be 60 to 70% of our business is the tourism.
Correct.
So how are you going to deal with that, do you suppose?
Well, you have to definitely put that into context and go operate at 40% or 30%.
For sure. That's how
you don't have a choice. You're unrealistic if you think you're going to be, I don't care how people want to go out and everything, you're not going to be at 100% tomorrow. There's no way in the world that's going to happen. You know, I mean, downtown, you depend on entertainment at night, you depend on offices being full, you depend on traveler business, and you depend on vacation travelers. Mm-hmm. So those four things don't exist anymore, and they're not going to come back overnight. You know, and just, I mean, some of those are not going to come back for another year, probably.
Right.
So, you know, those are, it's basically we have to walk into a world of that we've never faced before. You don't know. You're going to start at 30% and then go up from there. You want to hope then things are going to grow back and, you know, come back to you.
So then the last thing I'll say before we jump out of this subject and get kind of back into our regular show is, what are you thinking about for operating reserves? So, for example, we would never run a business unless we were brand spanking new like we did in 1989, where you didn't have a payroll or two or three in the bank. And this is where the PPP funds help as an on-ramp to getting up and running again, is that they help finance your payroll and hopefully are forgiven. So this is our – we have a 24-week on-ramp, and now it's down to about 22 weeks on-ramp with our PPP funds, so that if indeed things close down again or you're up and running and it's just not as busy as you need to be to survive – at least we have some help with our payroll funds, which are the number one expense in our business.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely the biggest nut to crack every month, every 2 weeks, actually.
Yeah,
it is. It is definitely the anxiety part of the restaurant business in an uncertain world like we're in. That's the biggest nut to me.
Making payroll, everything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because the rest, you know, we can swing through. We can. I mean, you can ask. You can, at the worst, you can ask your supplier, hey, just wait 1 week or 2 days or 3 days, whatever. But you can't pass payroll.
Yeah,
payroll is, you know, payroll, the one thing people need to remember, payroll is for people who already have put in the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying them for things they've already done. Everybody else, everything else is for the future. This is for people who've already worked.
Right.
So you can't delay that. You can't.
No, they're trying to pay their rent and the utilities,
exactly,
and feed their children and pay their,
yeah,
mortgage. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not something to, you don't have a choice in the matter here. It's not a playing ground. There is no movement. It's do when it's due. And,
right.
And so those are, and because it's so, the restaurant business has been so focused on high services and everything and, you know, minimum wage and all that, and which is all good, you know. We want people to make money, but all those different things that have happened over the last 10 years in terms of how payroll has accentuated in the restaurant business, forget the, you know, it used to be 35%, 37% were numbers for making pro forma for a restaurant. I'm sure there are people who still do that. I don't have any idea where that went because that's gone for like almost 10 years.
I never was able to do that even before.
Yeah.
So getting down to it, for me, we're looking at the end of PPP. Everything we're building now has to be survivable at the end of 20 weeks from now.
Right.
Because that's when PPP funds are exhausted, right? So that's how we're looking at it. You had said you're looking for the next couple of months. I'm looking at 20 weeks, and we're doing the countdown. Can this business survive without the support of the PPP program? And how do we build it so that it does survive? And right, just throw the possible reclosing out the window and don't even think about it. And just kind of, what can we do to so that we're viable in 20 weeks? And that's how we're taking this.
No, it's exactly the plan to go with, I think. It's a smart way to do it.
All right, we got another whole hour coming up. It's Taste of the Week. It's our Pass It Down with a Savory Greek Pie. Dick's Drive-In is going to join us. And, of course, our Rub With Love Tasty Trivia Challenge is up to finish the hour. So stay with us on Cairo. It's Tom and Terry, the Hot Stove Society Show. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Chef Terry is just babbling away about his favorite bakery. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, live from Madison Valley.
Live from Madison Valley. So today, my taste of the week, Terry, we're going to get into that. We're going to have a savory spinach Greek pie talk, a little chat today. Jasmine Donovan is here, president and CFO of Dick's Drive-In. She's a powerhouse. Yeah. We see her in the Restaurant Association, and she's just a strong, nice lady. We like her a lot. And, of course, we're going to play our Rub With Love Tasty Trivia Challenge. Okay, back to my taste of the week. And I don't like to toot my own horn sometimes, and I'm not really tooting it because this is just a classic, right? But sometimes you have to give a classic its due.
Mm.
And my due for a classic this week is the Reuben sandwich. And I'm surprised how dedicated people are to it. It's a little bit like pizza. You know, people have a real opinion about who makes the best Reuben, who makes the best pizza, who makes the best fried chicken. There's certain foods that really do it. And I never considered that Reuben was one of those foods. Mm-hmm. But over and over and over again, on Wednesday, I did almost 250 sandwiches on the dock out in Ballard. And over again, people would say, Reubens are my favorite. As soon as I saw it, I had to order one, you know, and I never thought about it from that way. Wasn't that surprising, Amy? We pre-sold 125 sandwiches before we opened the door.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
There's a following.
And so to me, what made it really good was the griddle. You have to get a nice crunch on your bread. Even even when you think it might be over crunchy, the inside of that sandwich is so wet with the kraut and the Russian dressing,
cheese,
and the moist corned beef that it can re-soften your bread in no time at all. Mm-hmm. So that was key. A good Swiss, like a Gruyere, you know, something that has a little punch to it, really comes through. Just a trashy Russian dressing, kind of Thousand Island dressing, very important. And then I thought, what really, I mean, the corned beef was perfect. We corned our own, and it came out so good. First time in my whole life that we've ever done that in our company. But what I thought was really the dynamic part of the Reuben, and I didn't consider it a whole lot, was how uncooked the sauerkraut was. So a lot of times when I make sauerkraut, I make it kind of in that Czechoslovakian, kind of Eastern European way, where it's kind of braised in a dark gravy, and it's delicious, but it's heavy. Mm-hmm. This kraut we took right out of the can, 5 pound, like a five, not 5 gallon, maybe five. Anyway, a big can of German sauerkraut. But it comes out just freshly pickled, and all I did was warm it up and put it on. That brightness of the sauerkraut just slayed that sandwich, and I'm telling you, I'm never going to overcook my kraut again.
Don't overcook your kraut.
Don't overcook your kraut. Okay, chef, what's your taste of the week?
I had those little, what do you call it? Rice, like almost like a bun, you know, like a nice little rice bun.
Mm-hmm. Wrapped in the banana leaf type bun?
No. Just rice bun, but not rice. Rice dough bun.
Oh, okay.
Like almost like a
bao.
Bun, like a like a bao, yes, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And inside stuffed with mango and like a nice little sweet. The whole thing was sweet. It was like a dessert. And it's from the, I believe it's called Finn Vietnamese Coffee on Wells Street. Oh, no, it's not Finn Vietnamese Coffee. Sorry, my bad. It's a bakery, EM Bakery on Wells Street in Little Vietnam.
So is that Wells, Wells Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a street that's south of Jackson.
Okay.
So if you're on Jackson and 12, you make a left on Jackson, you go one block to the light, you make a left on Wells Street, I believe that's the name of the street, and you go two blocks, and you, on the right side, you'll find this brand new, it opened like 6 months ago, or maybe not even that long ago. And they have those delicious, first of all, they make cool Vietnamese coffees. One of them, I think, is called Angels, or nice little beautiful foamy coffee, Vietnamese style, and like kind of like an egg white kind of idea on top. It's really delicious. And they also make those great little bun stuffed with different items. The one I had with mango was just absolutely delicious. And I think they need visitors and they need encouragement because they do a good job.
So when you say it's stuffed with mango, is that like, do they make a paste out of dried mango, or is it somehow?
It's whipped cream. Mango.
Oh,
I see.
It's
just whipped cream and mango.
I see.
You know, kind of Vietnamese style. But it's really delicious. It's well made and it's delicious stuff. And I think they might only make them on the weekend. So something to check out, you know, about that bakery. But it's a brand new bakery. She's the daughter of Fobak.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, she opened that like literally, like I think in January, maybe. Mm-hmm. So just a couple of months ago, maybe. So anyway, I would recommend for people to go check it out. If nothing, the coffee is delicious. And they get their own roast tree coffee. They went to Vietnam and picked the coffee. And they got a great, cool story. You know, so they have direct import of their own coffee beans. So it's really cool. I would recommend it.
I've been thinking about that lately, buying a coffee roaster for... You know, we're getting ready to reopen the Dahlia Bakery, and I've been thinking about how fun it would be to roast our own coffee for all of our restaurants. And so that's been on my mind a bit. And I went and visited a place up in Edmonds called Red Twig, and they have their own roaster there. It's from a company called Dietrich. And I sat right next to the roaster and watched them do it to see if it was feasible in our own restaurants, how it would go. And, man, those things are efficient. Those big it's not a huge roaster, but... They would do, I think, 5 kilos of beans at a time, and it was. I watched her do. It only takes like 10 or 12 minutes per batch, and so I watched her do 4 or 5 batches, just sitting there having a cup of soup and a sandwich, and which, by the way, was perfectly delicious at the Red Twig in Edmonds. And so, but it was fun to watch that little machine work and watch her work it. And it might be feasible to do our own coffee for our whole company. So I'm
That's
curious.
Very cool, Tom.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. And then maybe I could sell you some coffee, Chef. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Exactly.
Or you could come down and roast your own. How about that? Send somebody over to roast their own. Okay, we got lots to do here. Let's jump into our next segment, which, Amy, you said we have a pass-it-down participant.
Yes, it's almost like a pass-it-down and a kitchen conundrum.
Remember, don't let the recipe box die with you. Pass it on to your friends and family. It's your life that we're celebrating in your recipe box. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. Tom Douglas and the chef in the chateau. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fabulous, Tom.
I miss seeing you here in our studio. That's here at the Hot Stove. So
yep.
Hopefully one of these days you'll get vaccinated and get the hell back over here.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, Amy, tell us about our listener who's wanted to share their recipe. You know, we always say here at the Hot Stove during our classes is pass it down. Mm-hmm. Don't let the recipe box die with you.
Yes.
Because it's not just a list of ingredients. It's not just a list of instructions on how to, when to add them and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It is a piece of your life, right? Yeah. It's your life history in that box. Celebratory recipes that your grandmother made, that your mom made, that you have now turned into your own, and then you're going to pass on to other people. And if you don't have kids, share them with a neighbor. Share your life story with a neighbor. So what did you find out today?
Okay, so Jennifer, who's listening from Oregon, I'm not going to say her last name.
Good.
We're keeping her identity secret because she's trying to fool her husband on this recipe.
Okay.
Okay, so she emailed me, and she's a newlywed. She wants to make her new husband his mother's savory Greek pie, mm-hmm. so like a nice spanakopita. His mother would make it on special occasions, Greek Easter, Greek festivals. Well, Jennifer wants to know if she can cheat and not make the phyllo dough from scratch. So can she fool him? It's, you know, making dough balls, rolling it out on a rolling pin, all of these steps would probably make it delicious. She isn't a baker, but she wants to skip it. So she has three questions for you.
Okay, I'm listening.
Can she fool him with frozen phyllo? The original recipe also calls for a spiral shape, you know, that beautiful spiral. Can she change the shape? And how should she roast her lamb? So I see Bridget Charters is putting on her...
Well, Bridget's the only one who knows. Bridget's one of the chefs here at the Hot Stove. She's the only one I know that's made homemade phyllo before. And so the question is, can this young newlywed fool her husband with store-bought phyllo compared to his mother's recipe of homemade phyllo? What's the big difference?
So homemade phyllo is a little bit thicker than store-bought phyllo.
So you can't just double layer it and get away with it.
No, not really. But because to get it that thin, I mean, there was a gentleman in San Francisco years and years ago had a shop out on Clement and could roll it. He had a giant marble table and would stretch it and use lots of cornstarch. So homemade phyllo is going to be a little bit thicker
than with the store-bought Apollo.
It depends on how long his mom's been making phyllo.
Ever. It sounds like ever. Forever.
It was little.
Yeah.
There are different brands you can buy that are a little bit thicker.
Okay.
Where do they live?
In Oregon.
In Oregon. So, yeah, no, she just shook her head right there. Okay, thanks, Bridget. I knew you walked in and I knew you had made phyllo before.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I would say, Chef, maybe you have an inspiration too, but my thing is the effort is what counts.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The attempt is what counts. The love that she has for her husband to even try this. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think couching it more like, you know, I'm not trying to fool him. I've never made this before. This is my first attempt. I can't wait someday to make my own phyllo. But here, let's have this together as a token of my appreciation of my new husband.
Yeah. Well, why doesn't she just make it? It's so wonderful, and it's not that hard to make.
You just said it was hard. That's why we asked you.
I know, but, you know, you got to start somewhere, right? It's like making homemade pasta.
I mean, looking at the recipe, you have to make 30 or so different balls, roll them all out. Ugh.
Amy, come on. We are cooking people.
So, Chef, what do you say about this?
I say for the first time, she should just buy the frozen one, triple the layers with, you know, egg wash in the middle of...
No, butter in the middle, sorry.
Well, butter, pardon me, yes.
Yeah.
Butter, yes. In between each sheet, and just make a spinach tacos that way, because I think she's going to spend a lot of time, first of all, making this recipe correctly. It's a very... I've made that before. It's a different, even by buying the dough, it's a very time-consuming recipe. It's very, you know, you want to be successful.
What if you change the shape?
I agree with you, Tom. Well, first of all, changing the shape is not hard. Use a Pyrex rectangle pan, and you'll have, you know, you'll have a different shape if you can't make it in spiral.
And the recipe is the spiral.
Yeah,
I know, but she can also make it in a rectangle layered sheets with the stuffing in the middle, almost like a lasagna idea.
So go back to where you were headed, Chef, when you were saying that, because before the shape.
So put three layers of sheets. Each sheet is buttered. You put another sheet on top, and then after that you make your stuffing. So you have sauteed spinach, you have cheese, and you have... I usually put a little cream in my cheese to make it so then it's a little bit smoother of a texture in the middle. And you can also do... One thing that you can do is put a layer of grape leaf on top. That will give it a beautiful flavor of... I love the flavor of grape leaf. You know, those marinated grape leaves.
The vinegar ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then cover the whole thing with more phyllo dough on top. And then bake your spinach tacos that way. And then you have wonderful, crispy phyllo dough all the way around, you know, and the inside will be baked. And all you have to do is just cut it and serve a nice rectangle piece of it.
Okay, so the other suggestion I would have, Amy, is his mother still alive?
She is not.
Okay, because she can't just kind of serendipitously go down and get a lesson or anything like that. Yeah. So, Bridget, you're saying go for it. I'm saying that's a lot to ask.
But does she have time between now and then?
Well, it's an Easter thing. It sounds like it's an Easter thing.
We got it's the first weekend in April. So there's your buddy and mine, Alaya Cremeze. Alaya's amazing, and she has a website. She's in Greece on the island of Kos, and she has a website and can... she has step-by-step images of making fresh phyllo. So it might be kind of a fun thing for her to tinker with pre-Easter.
Yeah, a little project.
Yeah.
Like learning how to crochet.
Yeah, and it's like strudel. You have to cut away those thick edges that are so hard to get thin, but the middle always is stretched thin. It's just not going to be that perfectly thin stuff.
Well, we get fooled by perfectly thin by the machine-rolled of Palo phyllo that you buy. That's not the real phyllo.
It's not the reality.
That's not reality.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, Bridget, we have three different opinions here. Mine is make it with the store-bought stuff and enjoy. Terry's is maybe try something, make it with store-bought, but maybe try something different with and create your own version of mother-in-law's phyllo. And Bridget's is buck up, practice, and then go for it.
Okay. Well, so her last two questions is about the shape. Can she switch it up?
I would not.
Don't switch it up. Okay.
Not if she's trying to fool him.
Yeah. And how should she roast the lamb that goes with it?
Ooh, low and slow for me. Yep. I love well-done leg of lamb on the bone. And so, you know, it's one of those few roasts.
12-hour braise. 12-hour braise.
Yeah, I'm more of a roast. I'm not a braiser. I'm a roaster. And so that's what I would do. I would lard it with cloves of garlic, and then I would tie it with a string, some lemons around the upside, or at least make a mop. You know what I mean by a mop?
Rosemary.
So that's vinegar, rosemary, lemon juice, and olive oil, and make a mop and mop it every 15 to 30 minutes.
And when you say mop, what are you ladling it with?
It's like a pastry brush.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and then just low and slow. Think about it as if it's on a rotisserie over a low coals of a fireplace, and do the same thing in your oven.
Or a wood-burning oven.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm going to Tom's house, Terry. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going there.
No kidding.
And Jackie makes a great spanakopita, but she uses chard.
Yum.
And to me, what I like about that is it has a little bit more bite to it.
Texture.
So, yeah.
Yeah. More texture, yeah.
All right, that was fun. Next up, we're going to talk about Dick's restaurants. the famous burger and fries and milkshake joint all over our city. On Cairo Radio, it's Tom and Cherry in the Hot Stove Society kitchen. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rochero, the chef in a hat.
And Chef Terry, I sent an agent immediately after the segment where you talked about the new Vietnamese bakery in Seattle, and there is no such street.
It's not Wells Street. It's Weller Street.
Weller Street.
South Weller Street, which is basically one block south of Jackson and 12th Street. You make a left on Weller, and you go east.
I know exactly where it is now. So
right past the store, the seafood store, and all that stuff.
You know whose restaurant used to be there is Shiro Kashiba. Shiro's there in that area.
The name of the bakery is Hello E.M.
Hello M. E.M. All right, good.
E.M.
I'm glad we got that settled. Now we have to move on to more important things, like the pillar in our community, that is Dick's Drive-In. It's a household name. Everyone knows it. Jasmine Donovan is here. She's the president and CFO of Dick's Drive-In Restaurants. Welcome, Jasmine, to the Hot Stove Society show.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is it's exciting because, you know, I've known you and I've watched you grow over the last couple of years. And of course, I knew, is it your father, Dick, or is he your uncle?
My grandfather was Dick.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've met some of my other family members as well who've been active in the community for a long time before me.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, he was a go-getter. I loved when I got the few chances I got to hang out with Dick and talk the biz. So tell us about Dick's Drive-In these days and also the exciting news that Bellevue is going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, we were able to share very recently that we were going to be opening a location in Crossroads Shopping Center. We hope to have that location open by the end of 2021. And it's just kind of a continuation of the growth that started with the opening of our Edmonds location almost 10 years ago now. And that was kind of our first restaurant of the new era, if you will. And it was Edmonds was the first location, the new location we'd opened in 37 years when we opened it.
That is so crazy.
It was crazy, and it was a crazy success. We had no idea the brand was going to continue to be so popular, and we're just so very grateful that we're able to open Edmonds and then Kent, and now looking at Crossroads.
I remember, you know, watching the drama, and wasn't there like a contest to decide where you were going to throw your first new restaurant in 37 years? Wasn't there a big contest in the newspaper, and everyone was talking about it?
There was. It was a lot of fun. We had our customers vote on whether we were going to go north, south, or east with our first new location, and North won, but there was all sorts of shenanigans that took place. We had a hack into our poll at the time, and so North and South were competing against each other. It was actually two hackers. We had to do this big press conference where we said, we know who you are, and we're going to revoke your burger privileges if you don't stop this, and we were able to clean up the vote, and North had won, and we found that great site on Highway 99 up in Edmonds, and what was the Hagen parking lot is now the Winco parking lot. And then we were able to do that again when we opened Kent. So when we were ready to do Kent, we did another poll, this time just south and east. And we thought, oh, maybe, you know, we won't get as many votes this time because it's just south and east and it hasn't been as long. But it was just as popular. We had 100,000 votes in the first 24 hours and 170,000 votes in total. And South won. And when that store opened, then we promised the East Side that when we open our next location, they would get that restaurant. And in September, we were able to officially start looking. And in February, we announced that it was going to be Crossroads.
Wow, that's amazing. Chef Terry, have you been to a Dick's restaurant lately?
Not lately, unfortunately.
Jasmine, we got to fix this guy. He is just such a prude. He is such a food snob. Come on.
No, I am not a snob. Jasmine, you have to understand. I wasn't raised with Dick's in my small town in France. That was not there, unfortunately for us. You know, it's just I wasn't raised with it. So I don't have the same memorabilia built up around Dick's Drive-In like many Seattle-like do.
Well, you can never jump on the train unless you go for the first time, dude.
You got to start making memories with us sometime.
Yeah.
But I have been with my kids when they were little. I remember very vividly one day being with my two boys and say, okay, boys, what do you want to eat? And they go, Dick's Drive-In. And I was like, are you sure? They said, yes. I said, okay. You know, I'm game to try anything. I'm a chef. I love to try anything. I mean, yesterday I tried something with durian, which I thought was not very good. Okay. Anyway.
Durian is a fruit, right? So, yes, Jasmine, here's my thing. Tell me if I'm crazy about this. You know, I have my times when I go to Dick's, right? So I had a tradition after I had a big catering where you work all night, you're tired. The one on Holman Road, if I'm not mistaken, was open till 1 a.m. Before COVID. And so it was always my kind of like, okay, this is my little treat after working my butt off all night. The other time I go is when I see a long line, and I think this is counterintuitive. When I see a long line at Dick's, I know that when I get my burger, my deluxe fry and shake, that my burger is still going to be hot and crispy around the edge. Just one of my favorite things about a Dick's burger is that crispy edge on the burger itself. And sometimes when it's not busy, you know, they're sitting there for even 3 minutes or 5 minutes and they're different. But when they're just, like, getting them off the grill as fast as they can, that's my favorite time to have a Dick's burger.
Right off the grill. I mean, you just can't beat it. We don't leave the food up even when it's slow. We'll put it in the freezer, and it gets used in other ways. We don't actually throw it out. It can be repurposed once it's frozen, so it doesn't go to waste, but not for customers. But, yeah, when the lines are long, you know the fries are going to be super fresh right out of the oil, right out of the basket, and there's just, you can't beat it. So I understand that, definitely.
I think some people think that's weird about me, but I think it's a little bit counterintuitive because you want to go when there isn't a line, but no, you really do want to go when there is a line. Your background is interesting. You went to and came through the Navy program.
That's correct. Yeah, I was in the Navy before I came back and joined the family business. Although before I was in the Navy, I worked in the business as a crew member. So I have made those burgers, fries, and shakes myself. And it was an excellent job, an excellent early job to have.
And so how did you get your business savvy?
So when I was in the Navy, we grew up with it, first of all. I mean, it's hard not to at least learn some things by osmosis when you grow up with the business and the family. And all the conversations around the dinner table. But I did get my MBA at night school while I was serving in the military. So when I left the service and joined the business, I came in not just with my military experience, but also with an MBA with an emphasis in finance.
You are famous. I think Dick's is very famous for your core values. Tell us about how they came about and how you help to foster them every day with your team?
Oh, great question. Thank you. So when my grandfather passed away in 2016, that's a very pivotal moment for any business, particularly a founding business, is losing the founder. Many of our managers have, and all of them have been with us decades, some of them multiple decades. And we had to all come together and decide, why are we still in business together? Our founder has passed. He was the heart and soul of this business. What is it that we were really doing here? And why do we want to do more of it, right? Why do we want to build Kent? Why do we want to build Crossroads? Why do we want to start a food truck? What is it that we're doing here that's not just burgers, fries, and shakes? And so through a number of meetings and exercises and conversations, we defined what we call our enduring purpose. So our enduring purpose is to provide timeless value and build lifelong memories with our customers, employees, and communities. And we have four core values that we stand by in everything that we do, and that's integrity, quality, the golden rule, and finally, industriousness. And integrity, quality, and golden rule are core values that you'll see in any business. They're foundational for a reason. But industriousness, I think, is what makes us unique and special. So we support those who improve their lives through a dedication to hard work, professional growth, and personal growth. You see it every day in our amazing crew members who are working so hard for us and using our scholarship program to go to school or using our volunteer hours to give back to their community or, working to support their families and using our childcare stipends to make sure their kids are in a good place while they're able to go to school, go to work. So it's something that we're really passionate about and believe in. And we're really proud of all of our employees who started with us and then used this opportunity working for us to grow their skills and then move on to do great work in other things that they're passionate about.
Well, as a fellow restaurateur around town, and I think I could probably speak for Terry and I, it's inspirational to hear the breadth of your commitment to not only the city, the state, the your team, all the things that it takes to be successful in the restaurant business. And we appreciate your leadership in that area, especially on the you've been on the Restaurant Association board, I believe, and there's just all sorts of things that Dick's does in our community that sometimes gets overlooked for the fact that they just have a great burger and fries.
Yeah, and it's nice to know that you're not just taking, you're giving back so much. So exactly. That's great.
All right, Jasmine, are you going to stay with us for our Rub with Love Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge?
Absolutely.
All right. All right.
Uh-oh, we're dead. We're dead.
Usually, Terry, I start to get a little braggadocio at this point and start to trash talk, yes. But I'm scared today. I'm scared. We'll be right back on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, Cairo 97.3 FM. We're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. We're having a ball here today. Jasmine Donovan has stayed with us from our last segment. She is the grand poobah of Dick's restaurants around our town. We're going to play Rub with Love Tasty Trivia. A Rub with Love is a handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable made right out there at our warehouse in Ballard. Look for Rub with Love production in your local grocery stores or online or butcher shops or you name it. We're Bartell's Drugs. We're all over the place. In our Rub with Love world. Amy, who's our winner and what are they going to win today?
Okay, we're playing for Jennifer, who sent in her Pass It Down. And our team with Rub with Love hooked her up with some flavors for her Easter dinner. So they put in the masala rub for lamb, which was originally your lamb rub.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And piri piri, that has a nice lemony kick. And also they threw in some toasted shallot mustard, so hopefully you can throw in some deviled eggs or anything.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Jasmine. So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you 5 questions, and we're going to start with Terry. The loser is going to pay for shipping to Jennifer, and she is all the way in Oregon.
Oh, no. Wait.
Oh.
We don't often have someone as distinguished as Jasmine on our show. So I would say if Terry or I lose, we pay for shipping. If Jasmine loses, everyone in our radio listening audience wins a burger and fries! Just kidding.
Would be fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this shipping this product can range up to almost $10. So I want you to know that this is big, big money on the line here today.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay. I'll take it seriously.
All right.
Okay, Terry, are you ready?
I am very ready. Go ahead.
Okay. Number one. What is mixed with chocolate to make ganache?
Cream.
Yay! What ingredients are in a champagne cocktail?
In a champagne cocktail, I'm going to say champagne for sure. I'm going to go with, what is in the champagne cocktail? I'm going to go maybe raspberry liqueur.
Wrong.
A champagne cocktail.
That was a gong, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Champagne, a sugar cube, bitters, and a garnish with a lemon twist.
I should try that.
You were thinking Kir Royale, I think, is what you were thinking.
Well, Chef. I was thinking, what's a cocktail with champagne is what I was thinking, not champagne cocktail. Okay. But I get it. It's okay.
Okay.
Personally, I like to drink the champagne, really good champagne, not as often, just very good champagne and by itself.
Yeah, well, this wasn't the question.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What is the minimum time required to age Scotch whiskey? Is it A, 1 year, B, 5 years, C, 7 years, or D, 3 years?
Minimum 1 year.
Wrong. The answer is 3. True.
I go with that.
True or false? Free-range chicken eggs are the most nutritious eggs.
False.
You are correct. Okay, so you have 2 out of 4 so far. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Which of these food brands features a red spoon on its logo? A, Old El Paso, B, Betty Crocker, C, Green Giant, or D, Progresso?
Wow. Red spoon on the logo. What's the first one? I never even heard of the first one.
Old El Paso?
Yeah, oh, what is that?
That's that salsa made in New York City.
New York City.
Huh. I'm going to go with the El Paso. That sounds good.
That is so wrong.
Betty Crocker.
Okay, Jasmine, you're up.
Okay. All right.
All right. Number one, what nut is used to make Bakewell tart? A, Brazil nut, B, pine nut, C, peanut, or D, almond?
I'm going to be honest. Uh-oh. I've never heard of it either, oh. So I'm going to guess hazelnut.
Oh, well, that wasn't an option.
Oh, no. Well, that's fair. Since I hadn't heard of the product, I was not going to.
You now know what Jasmine's favorite nut is.
It's, yes, exactly. Now we know that.
It's D, almond.
Almond, got it.
I like that, Jasmine. I like that. That's good.
She takes control. She makes up her own game.
I like
game.
It. Yeah. Pierogi is what type of food? A, dumpling, B, pancake, C, pie, or D, pastry?
It's a pastry.
It is a dumpling. So sorry. Ah.
Looks a lot like me, Jasmine.
Because it has stuff inside of it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
See, I know what it is. I could have picked it out if you showed me a picture.
Garlic belongs to which flower family? A, daffodil, B, rose, C, lily, or D, sunflower?
My goodness. I feel like I'm getting the harder questions here, Amy.
I feel like you are, too, because I would have said allium family.
I'm going to go with daffodil.
It is lily.
Oh, man.
I'm so sorry.
I'm striking out on it's Jasmine's okay. questions, too. I thank you for that, Amy. Okay, you're still in the game. You only have to get two right.
Okay. In brewing beer, what are hops primarily used for?
They're used for fermentation.
Flavor.
And bitterness, too, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Caesar salad comes from which country? A, Italy, B, Mexico, C, United States, or D, Greece?
Well, I think it's supposed to be from Italy, but I'm going to say United States because I don't know if it was actually originally from Italy.
I'm so sorry. Mexico. It is from Mexico.
Oh, no. See, Terry and I had to change places because I would have gotten every one of his questions.
Yeah, see, that's how it works sometimes. I don't know why Amy hates you so much, Jasmine.
I don't know what I've done, Amy.
Yeah. I'm going to go right to Dick's Drive-In and buy everyone some deluxe and strawberry milkshakes later today.
Thank you.
Wait. Okay.
Okay. Let's
okay,
see.
Tom, you're on.
Okay, Tommy D. Tarragon is indigenous to which region? A, Provence, B, Spain, C, Siberia, or D, North America?
Oh, my God. That seems like a trick question. I would say Provence, personally, but I don't know.
No.
Siberia.
Correct.
Yeah. Siberia.
Are we?
All right, 0 for 1. Keep going.
True or false, bringing wine as a dinner gift in Portugal is an insult.
Absolutely. Take your stinking wine home with you.
True. It implies the host can't provide it.
Yes, exactly. Bring that cheap old cold duck.
Okay. Some apples are not good for cooking. They become mushy because they don't have enough what? A, cellulose, B, sugar, C, pectin, or D, carbohydrates?
Cellulose.
You are correct. Which dairy item is the lightest in weight? A, milk, B, heavy cream, C, light cream, or D, all weigh the same?
All weigh the same. An ounce is an ounce. Volume-wise, they might be different.
Weight. Heavy cream.
Hello, an ounce is an ounce.
Is the lightest in weight.
Well, Chef, am I wrong? Is an ounce an ounce?
Well, yeah, that's what I would think, too.
I said volume-wise, they might take up different volumes, but a weight-wise,
yeah, exactly.
An ounce is an ounce. It's like an ounce of steel weigh more than an ounce of milk?
I'm going to have to...
Or like a feather.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to buy you a Dick's Deluxe.
Yes, you have to buy me a Dick's Deluxe. That was a terrible question.
The word ketchup comes from which language?
The language of, hey, I'm behind. I need to catch up.
That was better than your grape, I guess. And that is wrong. Chinese is the correct answer. All right, so you and Thierry have tied, and Jasmine, you are paying for shipping, which really means Tom will be.
You got it.
Me? She spends my money so freely. Yeah, sorry about that, Jasmine. Thank you for coming on the show. If you want to be part of the show like Jasmine, you can join the community on Facebook or Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Amy Richardson in a really interesting
formally produced.
Sound and production by Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. Remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society show, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.